Okay, so if anybody has any thing to add to my prior comments, now would be a good time, and then we'll get right into the Constitution course.
I just want to make a reference to the, this is the Committee of Safety call for November, what is it, the 9th, right? Yeah, November 9th, 2017. So you can proceed now.
Okie dokie. All right.
I have a question if I could.
Well, all right, but it's $10 at the beginning of the show. It's free at the end.
Just real quick, is the sheriff's book done, or is it still being tweaked?
You're
can we start,
talking to the wrong guy. I have no info. I am not following that story at all.
Okay, I didn't know Jan was on tonight or not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okie dokie. Good question. I just got no answers.
Checks in the mail.
Yeah, something. Well, actually, you don't know how close you are. Alrighty. So when we last discussed the Constitution course, I believe we left off on Section 8, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7. So I'm going to flip over to Clause 7 and look at Clause 8. Okay, so yes, we were talking about to establish post offices and roads, and I went through all of why the general post office was so important to creation of the Republic. Yes, so Article 7 or Clause 7 says provided Congress authority over post offices and post roads. The Post Reorganization Act, Public Law 91-375, passed on August 12, 1970, created the U.S. Postal Service, an independent agency, which is actually an oxymoron. Independent means to be free from external control and constraint, removed from government control, whereas agency, according to Webster's, is a unit of government. And it is my understanding that that act basically sold our postal service to the French, which is why some of us who are aware of such things will use postal money orders where we can to pay for things because it's backed by the French franc. So if you didn't know that, a postal money order is not in Federal Reserve notes. It's in French francs. So that would kind of indicate that the idea that the Postal Service was sold to a French corporation is exactly spot on. So if you didn't know that, be advised. Okay, so our Clause 8. Authorize Congress to promote useful science and arts. We might have a little trouble defining useful these days with all the usurpers running around, but you and I know what useful is. So that was meant to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries, which is, you know, basically getting around to the patent office. There was a great scene from a TV show called Leverage, where a group of professional thieves get together and they help out guys like you and me that are overpowered by the bad guys, corporations and banks and judges and whatever. And after 3 years of being on air, their biggest show, according to the characters in the show, their dialogue, their script, their lines, was the biggest caper, the biggest pie, was when they broke into the U.S. Patent Office. Take note of that. Be advised. Okay, so now we're in the Clause 9. Authorize Congress to create Article 3 courts. Well, we've certainly talked a bit about that in the NLA, haven't we? And basically that is a constitution of tribunals inferior to the U.S. Supreme Court. In Clause 10, authorized Congress to provide law enforcement at sea, which is to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. And those are some interesting words there, law of nations, because I have mentioned to you that the entire planet since the mid-1700s runs on a law book, which is called the Law of Nations. And for those of us that are interested in attacking public agencies and have realized that the statutory and the common law and the administrative and the commerce approaches don't work so well right now with the corruption, we're going with international law and treaties, and we're beginning to have a little success. But I'm not going to get into that tonight. That's a whole show or two on its own. But it says right there, to define and punish piracies and felonies committed on the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. So it's the wording that I want you to pay attention to. Clause 11, to declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning capture on land and water. And if you're not aware of what letters of marque are, you may recall at the time that the European monarchies were at war with each other, and Spain was shooting at England, and England was shooting at France, and France was shooting at the Dutch, and the Dutch were shooting at the Portuguese. They would issue letters of marque, which were basically contracts, to pirate sea captains like me to take my ship. And if I got a letter of marque from the Queen of England, that meant I could go and rob, burn, steal, pillage, and plunder French ships, if that's what the contract said. So that's what letters of marque are. Not unlike corporate contracts, if you think about it. That actually cracked. I cracked myself up. Clause 12, to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that you shall be for a longer term than 2 years. Now, isn't that interesting? That we can raise an army, but we can only fund it for 2 years at a time. Well, obviously, that rule has been broken pretty good. Clause 13, to provide and maintain a Navy. The only military group that can be constitutional and kept in constant operation is a Navy. And there is nothing else, no Air Force, no Army. And I've read some interesting information, which I shared with you concerning the Navy secrets, the Marine, U.S. Marine Corps Secret Service, and the Marines have always been not a, under the Constitution, it has been considered incorrect, and I may be wrong on this, maybe somebody get a legal eagle on this, but it's my understanding that the Marines have always been under the Navy. Now, today we have, you know, Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, but technically, according to the Constitution, if I got it right, the Marines are under the Navy. Clause 14, to make rules for the government and regulation of land and naval forces. Now, this is really interesting because I've been remiss on trying to follow up on Rob Ryder. And, you know, he's his video, Make Them Whine, Ask for W-9, and his FOIAs in the Central Violation Bureau, and using the Army forms. And so I hadn't watched his stuff in quite a few months, so I had tried to catch up a little bit. And he was talking about the investigator generals of the military, and specifically the Army. And as it turns out, because he read it right off the regulations, you can go to the military investigator generals and complain about things like denial of due process and use of your fictitious name. And when I say that, yeah, kind of, sort of, it does get into the all caps, but basically it gets into the Chicago style book, and that's really important. So Rob is not coming at it as a straw man, all caps, blah, blah, blah. He's not doing that. He's coming at it from a very different position. And so those two items were brought up, that it is clear that it affects the military, and it specifically affects the Army, and the Army is liable to support treaties, whether they're legal or not. And I thought that was astounding that the U.S. military must support all treaties signed by the U.S. Inc., even if they're illegal. And, of course, there were several treaties that we quoted. I love to go with the Universal Declaration on Human Rights. But there was another treaty whose name I don't recall. But basically, if a judge violates your right to due process, or a lawyer or a sheriff or whatever, you can take it to the investigator general of the military. It's part of their job description. So I found that quite interesting, and it's why I digress, because I just saw that last night. Clause 15, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Well, we can certainly use the militias right now to support the laws of the Union, and we can certainly use them to repel invasions. You know, we can get into a gray area with suppress insurrections, although you and I can make a good case of it against the powers that be in the public agencies. But I don't think there's much discussion over the violation of the laws of the Union and repel invasions. Ask anybody that lives on the border with Mexico, and they'll tell you. Okay, so this, oh, by the way, that did not authorize Congress to create Homeland Security. That's a private corporate agency, and nowhere is that constitutional. Okay, so now we're in Clause 16, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the disciplines described in Congress. So, you know, listen carefully to these words here. To provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. And then for commas are important. It says to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, comma. Okay, so that's one deal. And then it says, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. That doesn't say that the Congress gets to govern all militias all the time, everywhere. It only gets to do that with militias that are in the service of the United States. That's why it says, comma, that's why it says reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. So Congress doesn't control the militias in any way, shape, or form, except those that are employed in the service of the United States. So if your militias are in the service of your state, the Constitution gives zero authority to the Congress or the President. Well, I shouldn't say president, but zero authority to Congress to interfere with militia activity within your state. Obviously, as Brent Winters has pointed out on several occasions, the president can certainly call forth the militia if he wishes to do so. He has that executive authority. So that's why I had to stop myself. Clause 17. To exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district, over such district not exceeding 10 square miles as may, by secession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of the government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state, in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Now, this warrants a little discussion. There's a lot of hoodoo about that, but I can boil it down to the corporate constitution that the U.S. Inc. uses says otherwise. But under the organic constitution, it basically says what everybody screams about in our realm, which is, hey, you got the District of Columbia, it's 10 square miles, and anything the state has agreed that was purchased by the central government for the purposes of forts, magazines, arsenal, stockyards, and other needful buildings. And that's it. So that's how they got around it, because they went corporate on us. Clause 18, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all the other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. So that's kind of like a catch-all to the prior 17 clauses. So that takes care of that. The two enemies of the people are criminals and government. So let us tie the second one down with the chains of the Constitution, so the second will not become the legalized version of the first. Thomas Jefferson, put not your faith in men, but bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. Again, by Tommy. If the present Congress errs too much in talking, that's an oxymoron, huh? How can it be otherwise in a body to which the people send 150 lawyers whose trade it is to question everything, yield nothing, and talk by the hour? Again, Thomas Jefferson. That's a good one. So now we're in Article in Section 9, which consists of 8 clauses defining 8 prohibitions of Congress. So Section 9, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 1, the migration and importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person, which obviously is all about allowing the slave trade between the states, which was supposedly, allegedly, allowed by another amendment. So here, now, Clause 2, this is huge. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public of safety may require it. Well, a lot of people don't know the story behind the story behind the story on the Civil War. And if you had bothered, well, the big picture was, of course, the Rothschild banksters were trying to take over the Republic. That's an old story that's been going on for a long time. You had I read 4 letters of secession by the southern states. I believe one was North Carolina, one was Texas. Oh my gosh, and I can't remember the other two at the moment. But the point I'm making here is that the Rothschild banksters had been using the industrial might of the North, but they didn't have the raw materials of the South. It's all about money. Follow the money. Well, Civil War is all about money. I'm going to explain it to you. So you had the North being bullied by the Rothschild banksters out of Europe, and they kept hammering the economy of the South. But here's the kicker. In that 10 or 12-year period in run-up, they violated the North. Violated and continue to violate and continue to ignore the Constitution. This is clearly written in these 4 letters of secession. They do chapter and verse. They do the section, the article, the clause. I mean, they nail it. And it was over a 10-year, 12-year period that you had this twofold whammy of this financial assault and this constitutional assault. And this is never, ever, ever, ever talked about. All you hear is the cabal, dark side, blah, 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 about slaves and cotton plantations and the entire economy of the South would falter. That is horse hockey. The South was exporting so much raw goods and grains that they had a much more powerful, much richer, much healthier, much bigger, much more profitable economy than the North. And yeah, they would have been a whole bunch of losers if slaves went, but they would have readjusted because farming, and their crops would have still grown. So that was the scenario. It was not about slavery. It was about these things. But the most important thing in my mind was the violation of the northern states of the Constitution. And that's what pushed the states to secede from the Union, because from their perspective, the Union didn't exist anymore because nobody was playing by the rules of the Constitution. And now we get into habeas corpus. The Lincoln, all right, so he's got this mess to wade through. He's trying to hold the Union together. And, he's with the North, which is being bullied and run by the Rothschilds. And he's also got to deal with his brothers in the South. And it became a war, which obviously everybody knows. So he suspended habeas corpus. And that was true throughout all the war years. Now, what is little talked about in history is that a lot of governments of a lot of states really like the idea of suspending habeas corpus. Because just as you see today, Rod Class is a perfect example. He goes in on a little gun charge. And he blazed it all out, and the U.S. Supreme Court seals the record, and Rob cops a plea, and everybody calls him a sellout. Well, that's because Homeland Security and the courts decided to come up with a third new charge of terrorism with a 22-year term, which is why Rod copped the plea. It had nothing to do with the guns. They were going to throw him in jail for terrorism. Well, this is exactly what happened with Homeland Security today with Rod, and that's what happened during the Civil War, is a lot of states loved that power. We could come in and grab your butt in the middle of the night and haul you off and lock you up and charge you with whatever we wanted to charge with our kangaroo courts and put you in jail. And this went on through the entire Civil War. And some states, the powers that be that were in charge, the governors and the legislatures and those guys, they used it as a power-building tool. And that is how they got themselves in power during the war years. And they were not willing to give up that power. They liked it. It suited their needs. They preferred to have that available. And so Lincoln often remarked in that his greatest mistake throughout this entire affair referred to as the Civil War was the suspension of habeas corpus. Now, he sent out his representatives to all of the states of the Union when the war, quote, was over, specifically to inform the states that he was going to reinstitute habeas corpus. And there were rebellions. This is very little talked about, but this is hugely important. There were rebellions within certain states that wanted to keep this power so that they could keep control of their political machines. And Lincoln sent out some bad butt generals to read the Riot Act to these states. And when Lincoln finally, and this was a period, I forget exactly how long it was going on, but there's a 5-week period that sticks in my head in this saga. And at the end of week 4, Lincoln decided and put in writing, and let everybody know playtime's over. Next week, I am reinstituting habeas corpus. And, of course, that's when he got shot a few days later. Is it related? You betcha. And that is a story of habeas corpus. And that is why it is so important and powerful. And so I wanted to take the time to tell you that story, because that's history. You can look it up. It's in the books. It's just not in the popular books. The cabal shoves up your butts in the public indoctrination schools. But at any rate, that is absolutely gospel true. So the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless, when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Well, you can understand from the story that I told you, well, you know, Lincoln was calling it a rebellion. Well, you know, in light of the fact that the North had been violating the Constitution for over a decade, I don't know if you'd call it a rebellion, but that could be debated at another time. Clause 3. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. And so bills of attainder, as they are technically called, are such special acts of the legislature as inflict capital punishments upon persons supposed to be guilty of high offenses, such as treason and felony, without any conviction in the ordinary course of judicial proceedings. If an act inflicts a milder degree of punishment than death, it is called a bill of pains and penalties, but both are included in a prohibition in the federal constitution. And that can be found in Lozier versus Sherman's. And so now we talk about an ex post facto law, which is the law passed after the occurrence of a fact or commission of an act, which retrospectively changes the legal consequences or relations of such fact or deed. So that's Article 1, Section 10. Here we are. The states are forbidden to pass any ex post facto law. So you can't pass a law that goes retro. You know, that's the point. You can't hold somebody accountable for a crime that was committed when it wasn't a crime. Just because you made it a crime later doesn't mean you can go back and charge that person with a crime before it was a law. And that's basically what they're saying now. So Clause 4, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. And they're basically saying that if we're going to do taxes, it's got to be fair for everybody. It's got to be equal, straight across the board. That was the intent of that clause. So, no income tax. The Congress cannot, by any definition it may adopt of income in this case, conclude the matter, since it cannot by legislation alter the Constitution, from which it alone derives its power to legislate, and within whose limitations alone that power can be lawfully expressed. And it's in Eisner and McComber. That sounds like something that Chris Ann Hall screams all the time. The 16th Amendment does not justify the taxation of persons or things previously immune. It was intended only to remove all occasions for the apportionment of income taxes among the states. It does not authorize a tax on a salary. And that can be found in Evans versus Gore. So then we come up to Clause 5. No tax or duty shall be laid on articles exported from any state. This is prohibited tax on articles exported from any state. This relieves export taxes between states on cigarettes and alcohol. So New York can't, you know, charge a tax to Tennessee, and Tennessee can't charge a tax to California, and that was the intent of that deal. Clause 6. No preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to and from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. And I described to you that Neo war that was going on between the state of Michigan and the state of Ohio over Toledo, because Toledo was a port, and there was a river in Michigan that led to the port. And the original borders cut Michigan off from access to Lake Erie, and they went to war over it. That's what that's all about. Articles, Clause 7, no money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. They don't say what time it is, but they say from time to time. We get an annual budget, but we don't get an annual accounting. At least I don't recall any annual accounting. Maybe I'm wrong. So that was intended to, you know, prohibited poor accounting, misappropriation of funds. Lost money is a crime. Let me repeat that. Lost money is a crime. Well, you remember the day before 9/11, oh my God, what's his name? The Secretary of Defense said, excuse me, we seem to be missing $2 trillion. And of course, the next day the towers came down. Isn't that interesting? Lost money is a crime. What's that?
The Pentagon,
right? Yeah, right, there's the Pentagon. Clause 8. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress, accept any present, emolument, office, or title of any kind whatsoever from any king, prince, or foreign state. And this is the prohibited titles of nobility, and one of which is Esquire. In English law, a title of dignity next above gentleman but below knight, also a title of office given to barristers at law, justices of the peace, and others. So that's blah, 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 blah. I've used this term in American law, particularly as applied to justices of the peace and other inferior judicial officers. They cover that in a case that was called Christian versus Ashley County. But technically, you know, if you, well, we, I think we all understand the idea that the missing 13th Amendment and the fact that they are all titles of nobility. So if anybody in this country is calling them, in public service, is calling them an esquire, well, they're in violation of this clause. And ditto for barrister. Barrister is an attorney, an officer charged with representing and defending parties before the tribunal to which he is attached. And that's right out of Black's Fourth. No argument on that one. So now we move into Section 10. Article 1, Section 10 consists of three clauses that define about 15 state prohibitions, most of which are also prohibited of Congress. So, Clause 1, no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payments of debts. Nikki, sit down in your chair. She's bouncing up and down right now. Pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. And I want to really focus in where it says, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, because this is the attack posture that is being used by in power movement with their notice of liability. Their whole approach is to hold the official, whether it's a corporate CEO or with paperwork that I'm working on, to modify that to public officials like judges, governors, whatever. We have a contract. We have the right to contract. and you can't bring in bar attorneys and courts because we have a right to contract. And there it is, right there. It says, we, or law, impairing the obligation of contracts or grant titles of nobility to finish clause. Though it prohibited the treaties, the alliances, the confederations, the coinage and credit, legal tender, bills of attainder, ex post facto laws, and titles of nobility. But for me, the law, no, shall pass no law impairing the obligation of contracts is huge. So now we're in clause two. No state shall, without the consent of the Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports or exports, except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws, as in we're bringing Indiana's bringing in chickens from Tennessee or beef from Texas. So you can charge a little tax to cover the cost of the inspectors. And the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any states on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States. So the central government gets it if there's any profit. And all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. So this is where we got into a whole bunch of hoodoo with the bad guys in Congress pushing what is referred to as the Commerce Clause, where, you know, they think that they have control of Congress is what it says in this clause. And so they slowly but surely have been dipping away and talking about the Commerce Clause, which is the excuse they used, by the way, under Obamacare to force you to buy it, and even worse, to force a penalty on you if you didn't. That's clearly, I can hear Chris Ann Hall screaming right now about overstepping their bounds, but there it is right there. That's how they got a little piece of it right there. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships of war in time of peace. Isn't that interesting? Enter into any agreement or compact with another state or with a foreign power, or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay, as in one if by land, two if by sea, they're coming. Well, if they ain't coming, then you can't do it. So the only way that I can see where they get around this with this 230 years that the creating troops and ships and military and all, as it says right here in this clause, in or engage in war. It says no state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any of this or ships of war in time of peace. That would imply, and some of us already know this, that we're at war. And we have been for 230 years. So there's a hint right there that that's how they're getting around it. That's exactly where it lies. Okay. So that takes care of that section of the Constitution. And owing to the time, I don't feel like getting into starting up Article 2 and getting into executive powers. So I am going to stop there for the evening, because that's a big snoopful right there. There's a lot of important stuff in there, and I'm hoping that you grasp some of that importance, and my color commentary helped you understand historically why this stuff is important. And I'll open up the floor for questions, and with that, I yield.
Well done, John.
I didn't write none of that.
I know you didn't. I'm looking at it right here. I would like to piggyback, though, on the military, you know, what you were reading, the clauses about the military, and the military obligated to enforce treaties. Well, whose treaties are they obligated to enforce?
Anything that the U.S. Inc. has signed.
Right, and going back, taking that back to the Articles of Confederation, and the Articles of Confederation is what the South was under when they were prospering, and you eloquently said what was really going on down there. When, you know, people come up here and they start talking about, you know, slavery at the museums up here, and they're seeing that the miners went into the the coal pits at daybreak, and they didn't get out till sundown. And think, you know, they need to stop and think about the slaves in the South. They were outside all day in the sunshine, fresh air, you know, a handful of food here, a handful of food there, right off the vine. It wasn't like what they were using the people for up here in these areas, in the salt mines there in Michigan and other places, you know, where mining was done. So there is a lot that went on during the Industrial Revolution, and all of that was for the corporations. And what the corporations, or those people who were invested in the colonies to begin with, when the Articles of Confederation were put or enacted back in, what, 1777, 78, I believe, somewhere around there, they were all for independence and, you know, individual governance by the states, but just coming together to make things easier to trade. So it was all about commerce. So when that 1787 Constitution came about for the corporation, we the people, I mean, that is a trust for them and their posterity, not for those people who were just trying to do their own thing in their own states with their own people and, you know, make things happen. But anyway, I say all that to say, with the enforcement of treaties, the military, when it went all volunteer, the monetary system had already changed. The money changers came in, and you mentioned the money changers. You didn't say money changers. But when they took the silver out of the coin in violation of Article 1, Section 10, by definition, an all-volunteer military, under the Social Security number, they went off the standard that they were under the original intent of the good guys who came along and put the 10 amendments in there. You know, we'll go along, but, you know, to get along. However, you know, let's do it this way. Well, that when the monetary system was changed and they were getting paid with a foreign coin, you got to really ask, well, now whose treaties are they setting up, you know, for the private corporations that we have the cheapest paid, actually, is they bond us to pay, they're bonded, the military is bonded to pay their own salaries, you know, just by signing that oath that they're going to, you know, enter into this. It's worse than imaginable. I mean, that one can think of off the top of their head without the depth of knowledge that goes into knowing the Constitution, what it was about, what happened before, the history behind it. And the monetary system, how the money changed in 1965, and since then, even the people making the laws, Congress, the legislators, they're not even getting paid with constitutional coin. Who do these people work for? Of course we know. Anyway. I yield. I'm getting off on a tangent here.
Okay.
John.
I'm glad this isn't being, you know, recorded. Anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, Robert.
John, this is Val from Florida.
Hey, how you doing, buddy? What's up?
I'm doing great. let's go to the clause 17, section 8, where this says that the federal government shall be purchased by the consent of legislature of the state in which the same shall be for erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, a needful building. Wouldn't be the great defense for the bandits and the Bunker Hill, Nevada? Nevada is owned 80 or 90% by federal government, but this, don't you think there is too much land for such a erection of forts, magazines and arsenals, docks and needful buildings?
Sure. And I'm going to tie in your comment with something that Nikki said, and I'm going to share my view. And I don't want to get into this too heavily, but I'm going to state explicitly what most people understand. We have the Organic Constitution, and as Scalia said, it says what it says, and it doesn't say what it doesn't say. Then we got usurped somewhere along the line from the very beginning. Some people will tell you that from the very beginning, as Nikki raises these questions, you know, and that's the story behind the story. But very few people take it to the third level, the triple cross, the triple agent, and takes it to the story behind the story behind the story. And nobody talks about that. They only get to the story behind the story. And when Franklin said, it's a republic if you can keep it, this, what I am alluding to, is exactly what he was talking about. And very few people understand or share my view of what he meant by that. And so there was a triple cross going on here. And that's what he meant. If we were able, yes, a lot of this chicanery happened. Yeah, a lot of the founding fathers were Masons. Yeah, Rothschild's got his digs into the Constitution and the banking and all that's true. But it was all written in such a way that our founding fathers were not bad guys. They were not usurpers. They didn't sell us out from the very beginning. They had to do what they had to do because of the influence of the times, but they also put the story behind the story behind the story that gave us remedy. And that is what is never discussed by anybody, which gets back to your question about the Bundys and the land. And you're absolutely right if you look at it from the perspective that I have just proffered.
And I'd like to add to that is that Nevada Constitution, Article 1, Section 2 of the Nevada Constitution, and it is the only one of its kind in this nation at this time. Article 1, Section 2, that came in during Reconstruction to get Lincoln elected for a second term, it reads, purpose of government, paramount allegiance to United States. All political power is inherent in the people. Government is instituted for the protection, security, and benefit of the people, and they have a right to alter or reform the same whenever the public good may require it. It's got a period and then a but. B-U-T, but. The paramount allegiance of every citizen is due to the federal government in the exercise of all its constitutional powers, as the same have been or may be defined by the Supreme Court of the United States. And no power exists in the people or of this or any other state of the federal union to dissolve their connection therewith or perform any act tending to impair, subvert, or resist the supreme authority of the government of the United States. Now notice that all of these issues with the Bundys and up there in Oregon, they've all gone into Nevada. Because if Nevada can get this to the Supreme Court, it's going to extend to every other state of the federal union. It's right there in their Nevada Constitution. which apparently, according to Nevada History Online, and I did substitute teaching in Nevada, and when they give you substitute teaching, they give you videos, and they give you these things to speak, and it's right there. They teach it to the school children, but the school children who are going to school in Nevada, they don't realize what it's like in the other areas, because the word that they get, well, you're on the same footing as every other, the original 13. Well, when you stop and think about it, yeah, they are, because it was sham back in the 13 colonies because it was never submitted to the people for their ratification, the constitutions of the states that brought in that federal constitution. So they're doing everything according to the constitutions that they set in place originally.
You're pushing hard there, Nikki.
Article 6 says that, and I'm just saying it off the top of my head, I don't have it in front of me right now, but all contracts, engagements, and debts entered into prior to the Constitution and the Articles of Confederation are as valid now. So think back of your ancestors, and if any of them ever stood before those Ten Commandments and says, hey, we will obey, we got to hold them responsible for the Ten Commandments. That's just mine. They lie, they steal, they cheat, they bear false witness, they, you know, they're hypocrites because the one nation under God, and, you know, their God is mammon. I'm going off on a tangent again. I'll stop.
Yeah.
Thank you. For your information, Nikki, it is being recorded.
Oh, no. Okay. Sorry about that then.
Yeah. Well, for starters, you know, somewhere in the back, this is anything that violates the Constitution is null and void. That's number one. And that entire passage is null and void. Secondarily, and Chris Ann Hall seems to be on my mind tonight for whatever reason. She must be channeling me. And she explains quite clearly that the states are the employers and the central government is the employee. And that's quite clear. There is no discussion of this. And so the states conjointly are the ones that set the rules. The central government, a.k.a. the federal government, is not the supreme over anything and never was. They're the employee. Even in the corporate constitution, it's quite clear. So it doesn't matter. The states are the employers. They say what goes. And the central government follows. And the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, regardless of all this honky-tonk, was set up to, as Jefferson put, keep the chains on the central government. Now, if that system breaks down, you can revert back to the Articles of Confederation, and the states have the right to have a little meeting, which is called a Constitutional Congress, and fix it. And that, I don't know at this point when the last one was, but I know it's been quite well over 100 years, I'm sure. And so that's the system. And so it's up to the states. The states, because they became corporate, they dropped the ball on their duty under the Confederation to fix it. And the way it was all set up, the states would get together and tell Nevada where to stick it. And they would also have the wherewithal together to tell the central government or the federal government where to stick it. But the states got usurped and they dropped the ball. But that's their power. That's their right. And at any time, they can pick up the ball and run with it. So I wanted to point that out in this discussion. And with that, I yield.
You're very right.
And it all comes back to education. Just like the meeting tonight. Very good, John. I appreciate it.
Your check's in the mail.
You get the facts here based on documents. And I think it was Mark Twain that said, it ain't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure that just ain't so. And most of the people out there, they're getting their news from the television set, and it's all false. But that's their paradigm, and that's why it comes back to, and I encourage everyone on this call to show up again next week, because you're getting down to the base of the root of the problem and the solution to that problem by understanding what's being talked about. And you have documentation to back it up. So it's very important for everyone to continue to attend and encourage others, because
it all boils down to the people must unite with each other and take
right.
charge of what's happening, and that's through the Committee of Safety.
Right. I yield.
Somebody asked at the beginning of the call, what about the sheriff's handbook? There are some errors in it. Jan has his wife home from the hospital and is, he started working on it. I know today with John, the errors. So that's where that is.
Okay. Next.
John, this is Helena in Pennsylvania. You mentioned...
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Not too good.
That's too bad. That's.
I got electronic problems.
Me too. We talked about it.
Yeah, well, it seems to be a prevalent nationwide thing that we could discuss, especially with you. Now that I know I can talk to you about this for quite some time. They're attacking our gear, and it's hurting.
I'm glad you two hooked up.
Well,
anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. Sorry.
Side note, this is not why I unmuted my phone, but... as a side note, I do want to mention that I did write to one of the defense attorneys who are representing the Guantanamo detainees, because they're experiencing the same sort of vibrations and things and disruption of sleep. And three of the defense attorneys, even a Brigadier General Marine, was thrown into jail. Because he was trying to, I mean, these documents are really great. I'll send them to you. They sound identical to what John talks about, John Darash talks about on Monday, and what NLA stands for. It's really, really great. But what I unmuted myself for is to ask about what you brought up in the beginning, is a notice of liability of trespass, and I'm interested in the document you're trying to work up, and I don't think that I have the knowledge legally to do that, and I'm very interested because they are trespassing and violating my rights in various ways, including with this technology. So it's not smart meters that the Empire Movement is referring to in those documents, but I'm glad you're working on this, and I'm very interested when you finally come to some sort of working document that I might be able to look at and use for myself.
Yeah, we're working on that. It's a work in progress. I wouldn't expect anything too soon. But I did want to redirect your attention to this Rob Ryder video that I watched last night concerning the Investigator General. And if you want to jot this down, first of all, his name is Rob, R-O-B-B, and Ryder is R-Y-D-E-R. And this video is called Guarding Your Civil Liberties. And with that, you should be able to find it on YouTube fairly easily. So that's Rob Ryder, Guarding Your Civil Liberties. And this was See, I have been looking at approaches outside the statutory court system and of a higher jurisdiction. And I have talked about the Central Violation Bureau, and I have talked about the Universal Postal Union. And he just recently dug into this stuff with the military investigative general's office. And it's about an hour video. Take a look at it because it's really, really interesting. It's another way that you can put pressure on those lawyers that are representing the people in Guantanamo.
Those lawyers don't seem to need any pressure. They are doing a very good job, and they're representing the United States very well and trying to comport with the Constitution and the law. This Brigadier General defense attorney who is in charge, remarks were made September 15, 2016, on the Military Commission. And his last paragraph is very illustrative of what we're interested in, and that is live up to the highest standards of American justice, support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I'll go, where did I hear that before? Lays the groundwork for a system that fully comports with the rule of law and has the respect of international community. So anyway, it is defending the rule of law on behalf of all of us. And I skipped through a bunch of words. Those are things I highlighted. And sounds good.
Well, some of the words that you used are what I had viewed in the video last night, and I recognize them as coming right out of the military code. So we're very much in sync here.
It seems to be coming very much out of John Durash's mouth also, because he talks about it exactly the same words.
Well, thank you for that.
I just noticed that the embassies in Cuba, the United States and Canadian embassy and personnel and family members, and now the Miami doctor and few other visitors, very few, I think it was one actually, is what I've read about, who have gotten concussions and have gotten the vibrations and different types of noises. It's funny, but I hear a tuning fork, which is what you tune radar with. So that's the type of noise I get, and I do get vibrations, which are concussions. And I think I sent you the cavitation and how that causes concussions and brain damage. And so that's what's going on in the United States Canadian embassies and a particular hotel, I think. But these are direct line of sight, micro Doppler radar pulse through wall sensor devices are, all, by the FCC's terms, the correct term for them are radio locators, so they locate you, and then intentional radiators. And you can look those FCC words up. You'll probably come up with my name because I had a Freedom of Information request on it. And so they target lock and target track you if I guess I got local cops upset because I didn't sleep with them and I talk about it. So that's why I'm getting my punishment and loss of sleep and the concussions and the burns and all that. But it's just fascinating technology, and it was originally used for espionage. And back in 1970 is supposedly when they supposed to have stopped, but obviously they didn't, when the United States Embassy in Russia was being pulsed for about 3 or 4 decades, I'm sorry. Then there are New York Times stories that actually the United States was pulsing the Russian embassy here in Washington, D.C. at simultaneously at the same time. And it was espionage to overhear people. You don't need to place a bug. You don't need to break and enter to place a bug into a building. But you do pulse microwaves, radio frequencies in a microwave end of the electromagnetic spectrum to be able to hear what everybody says and pick up breath rate, heart rate, and speech And it's really only supposed to be used for emergency and exigent circumstances. And they're having a fun reality game with them. And it's the same thing's happening on the other side of Cuba Island at Guantanamo Bay. Identical, it's identical. And then there was an article that I recently found that these attorneys, and it's only the defense attorneys in Guantanamo, were dying. The one was 35, died from cancer, forget what kind. Another one was 42, I think. Another one was 51. You know, they're falling off like flies, and they're wondering why. Well, it's direct line of sight microwave. That's what it is. So it's directed at one person, and the person next to you doesn't get the cancer because they're not pulsing them. And then also I have the speed radar for ball, measuring the balls for, like, baseball, tennis, they use them for golf. Measure that, the speed of the ball. Those pitchers and catchers are the only ones on the ball teams that are getting the cancers. And it is, if you're left-handed, you get it at that whatever face area is showing toward the radar speed device to measure how fast the ball is when it's hitting your catcher's mitt. And that's how they're getting. They're dying also. So this is nasty stuff, and it does cause cancer. It caused cancer back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s when it wasn't as precise to the exact body part to vibrate. Now it's very precise, and now they can see you through multiple walls. And if anybody wants to look up the case, United States versus Denson is the only case that I'm aware of where one of these micro-Doppler radar devices was used. It's a microwave radio frequency device to search a home to see where Mr. Denson was, and they found him because they can pick up all the heartbeats inside the house. They can tell whether it's a fluttering curtain or a ceiling fan or a dog panting or your cat purring. They can pick up multiple, these tiniest of movements, and they broke down the door and got Mr. Denson back into jail. And it was Neil Gorsuch who heard that case. It's a Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, and he allowed that warrantless search. Denson, in case you're looking it up, is spelled D-E-N-S-O-N, United States versus Denson. And, of course, Neil Gorsuch, who wrote that majority opinion that warrantless search was allowed, is now one of our justices. By the way, the guy he replaced, Scalia, wrote the opinion for Kelo versus the United States, which is spelled K-Y-L-L-O. And Mr. Kelo was growing marijuana in a back room, and that was home was searched with escaping heat with an infrared, forward-looking infrared camera that just measures the escaping heat from a building. And they detected that back room was hotter than the other rooms, and they broke the door down, and Scalia wrote back, I don't remember the date, 2004 maybe, I don't remember, and said that was a warrantless search, and so Mr. Kelo, they could not use that evidence that they gathered in that breaking Mr. Kelo's door down and saying, okay, aha, you have marijuana growing thing in do back here in his back bedroom. But Neil Gorsuch allowed the search with microwave radio frequencies.
Okay. A little historical context on this. I may have brought it up in a conversation prior, but it's written right into the Nuremberg Treaty that they cannot microwave us. They use that very word. They can't microwave us without our permission. So this was way back when. Then chronologically, Edgar Snowden, when he took refuge in Russia, the first thing he did is he built a Faraday cage around his apartment. And a third and final is kind of a little MacGyver test to see how badly you're being attacked. And it's simply to hang a piece of aluminum foil flat in a window towards whatever tower you think may be the source, and you will find that in a week or two, there will be holes in the aluminum foil.
Okay, so, I don't need to window. This device goes through concrete block walls, steel walls, including a Faraday cage with holes in it that are 2 foot by 2 foot that Mr. Faraday built back then. This is direct line of sight and is a handheld device. The most powerful one that I know about that is unclassified is called STORMS, STORMS. That's Sense Through Obstructions Remote Monitoring System. It is manufactured by a company called V as in Victor, A as in Apple, W as in Walter, D as in David Engineering. And if you want the fact sheet on it, just put in the vawdengineering.com/ FAQ.html, and you'll see the specs on it. And it'll tell you that as of the second quarter of 2012, there was a handheld device that's as big as what the radar guns are that state police use here in Pennsylvania. So it's relatively portable, and it goes through walls. You don't need a window. Definitely don't need a window. And it does go through Faraday cages because it's very, very ultra-fine, accurate-fine beam-focused is what the actual term
is. Yeah, you're pointing out the state of the art latest iteration of this abuse of technology. I just gave it a little historical context, as in this has been around a long time.
When you write this notice of liability, keep this in mind because this is what I want to use it for, and I'm dying here. So hopefully you get that done for me before I'm dead. And I'm also getting these concussions, and pretty soon I'm going to have permanent brain damage. So next time I get on the call, I'll only be able to go. So I'll only be babbling. So please, please, please.
Okay. All right.
And then the Nuremberg. I mean, let's do it. Like as if it's going to work. I mean, we've tried. There's a whole group of us in the United States and all over the world, actually, who are suffering from this. It's a revenge, retaliation, virtual reality toy.
This is why I advocate going at it with from treaty.
Well, you know, if
statutory process completely.
If these defense attorneys are bringing it up in court, and those Guantanamo detainees certainly don't have any access to meters, and by the way, ultra-wideband is extremely difficult to measure.
Wow.
And so they're just reporting on this instead of doing any kind of measurement.
Well, that's why I'm interested in Rob Ryder's latest position in the investigator generals of the military.
Mm-hmm.
This gives them a way.
Going to fight the battle and present in court to the military commission, I'm all for it because the military guys know exactly what this is about. And these devices are readily available to first responders. They're supposed to be able to find the barest of heartbeat in a big heap of rubble during a catastrophe. That's what they're made for. And they do pick up your speech through walls. If they can pick up my heartbeat at my wrist, they can certainly tell what I'm saying by either reconstructing the motion of my mouth or the vibration of my vocal cords. These are sophisticated pieces of equipment. In the Denson case, they used a device called Range R, and that's RANGE-R. And that device is not the Cadillac of devices. That's like a Volkswagen Beetle. That one, you can, the latest model, I think you have to have, you can be 35 feet away from a building to see through multiple walls. And that's how they found Mr. Denson. The Storms device, the standoff range is 1,000 feet. It's 998 something. It's 300 meters, which translates to almost 1,000 feet. 1,000 feet's a long way. Long, long way, direct line of sight to go through multiple concrete block walls and brick walls and mortar and plaster and everything else. Long way.
Well, I'm feeling fairly confident that the days are very numbered in the use of such technology. And we're going to, you know, the paperwork that we put together will hold the accountable guilty. But this is all coming to an end very, very, very soon. Way before we can wander through our paperwork and holding them accountable, the plug's going to be pulled on these guys. Very, very soon.
Well, it can't be soon enough for me because last night, by the time I got this letter done for these attorneys, it was 5 o'clock when I sent it, 5:03, and 6 o'clock, I'm trying to fall asleep. At noon, I think by noon I got like 2 hours sleep maybe because they were constantly pounding at my hip joint, my spinal cord, my brain, causing concussions. This is nasty stuff.
Yep.
Nasty.
And it's coming to an end soon.
Well, promises, promises. I want to see it.
Don't we all?
Well, I just don't want to be hurt anymore. I did nothing wrong. Never had any problems with the law for them. Had me under some surveillance program to boot, which I suspect. Want to answer that Freedom of Information request. They have me on the, you know, COPS program or CV program or see something, say something program. So they're getting whatever the going rate is per head, $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 a year just to watch me. And what? I live a boring life. She likes to work in her garden. Instead, they burn my garden with these microwaves. And, it's, you know, I want to get back to living. I'm tired of this. I'm really tired of it. Tired. All right, John, I'm sorry. I'm done.
Okay, thank you.
Taken some points on this and learn and spread the word. And the more noise we make about it, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Anybody else next?
Yeah, I just want, this is Jan in Kansas, and I just wanted to see if everybody knew a little good news about the Goss, G-O-S-S, Family Water Rights Trial that took place in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, and the verdict came down, I believe it was November 3rd. It was the same day that the judge decided to go ahead and acknowledge Ryan Bundy's claim that the defense had not received the video from the camera. So it was that same day that the Goss Family Water Rights Trial that's been going on for about 20 years, the U.S. Court of Federal Claims ruled in their favor, in the favor of the Goss family.
Well, woo-hoo, that's good for us.
Right. And excuse me, John, go ahead.
No, I said we like good news.
Yeah, and this was over this family. It was a cattle operation that wanted to use the water on what's being claimed as federal land, and they'd already had, you know, been grandfathered in for I don't know how many decades. They were using the water for cattle way before the land ever became a state. So it's kind of really similar to the Bundys, who were grandfathered in, as I understand it, for the last 150 years. And the other thing I wanted to ask you, John, or anyone, but do you know anything about the July 11, 2013 motu proprio that came from the Vatican?
Well, I mean, yes, I do. I've read it. I'm well aware of it. I know that the Jesuits were pushing it, but basically it's like everything else. It meant nothing. Nothing happened. It ain't worth the paper it's printed on.
As far as that people haven't been using it or it's not being recognized, or both?
In my view, I would describe it as a smoke screen, under a controlled opposition. The Jesuits control the Vatican and the Pope. The Jesuits push that to control the narrative. And, of course, nothing happened. There's nothing, as Gary Will is fond of saying, you know, where's the enforcement?
Okay.
I have not paid it any mind. It's a great piece of writing if anybody actually used it.
Well, do you mean them or, like, I guess I'm saying if we start using it, isn't that where the enforcement starts, is for us to bring it forward
few people that I know of over the last 15 years, one brilliant man by the name of Boris, when we were doing our declaration of status, he's the only one that I know of that actually went at the Vatican, and he did it through the Archbishop of Chicago. So, yeah, he removed himself not only from the statutory in the U.S. Inc., but he also covered, he got through mind, he got through body, and he got into spirit. And he's the only one that I've ever known, and they kept that very quiet. And what you're asking is much, much huger. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Well,
it's not going to happen. When the Pope is in jail, that will have effect. That's my answer to your question.
Okay, can I ask one more way?
Not before. Go ahead.
Thank you for indulging me. So if I use it and I say that I'm standing on this and that they are 100% liable for their actions, that they no longer have immunity, and here's the paper that says so, what can they do about that? Because it's all true. I mean, other than being lawful.
When the Pope is in jail, you'll have a shot. And the boys at the top of the pecking order with the positive military and the white hats, they're the ones that are actually doing what you're suggesting. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at the end. But for you personally to pick up this battle, it ain't going to happen until the Pope is in jail. Literally. In my view.
All right. John. And then, but you're saying that it is being handled by the white hats now, and this is part
of
the good news?
I think they're handling it.
Oh, okay.
John?
You.
Yeah, that is a powerful document. There's no question, but it's like everything else you mentioned, no enforcement. But do you think a reference could be made in that notice of liability to that document?
I don't see what would be gained by it. I think we'd be getting too far afield. I would personally not do that in my modifications at this time because it has no use.
Well, that's one of the most powerful legal documents ever issued. But
that's what I understood.
It is. And
now, I can take that down to a much more base level. And Gary knows full well that over the last year, I have ceased directly aiding people on statutory questions because there's three tiers to the court, and the top tier is ecclesiastical, and that's all about black magic. And if you don't understand the black magic and you don't understand the phrases and the power of the black magic in a court, you don't get to the highest level, and even that is being ignored by the courts, and that is their highest level, and they know if they screw up at that level, then the Vatican will come down on them, and even that's being ignored. And you're talking about something that's 100 times higher up the ladder, 100 times. So I just see it as you know, look, if you want to make it, you want to wax philosophic, you want to make yourself feel good, you're absolutely perfectly right, but I don't see it going anywhere until the Pope is in jail.
Well, I don't think anything.
He's going to be in jail. He will be in jail.
I don't think anything's going to go anywhere until we get enough people to stand up and take some action. Yeah. I understand what's going on in the background, but if I'm quite removed from that, and I believe that we're probably on, as I said last night, on the 2-yard line. So we're very close to it going one way or another, and I feel it's going our way. So none of this is important at all, other than to improve the power of the document, because that's a very high, powerful document. It wouldn't be recognized. Well, I agree with all that. I just was curious.
I'm encouraging people at this stage, especially those who are on this call, to stay focused at your county level. And I encourage you that whatever you do, and whatever way...
You're gone.
Where'd you go?
Wow. Oh, wow. Well, he said he was having phone talk problems. So. I guess that's an indication.
Well, at 10:30.
Yeah.
I think we should conclude this call at this point, since we seem to have lost the connection with John.
Well, I want to know what he was going to say. It sounded like he was summarizing. Because
he
was saying, well, we need to all focus at the county level. Nikki, do you know what he was going to say? Do you talk to him a lot?
I don't talk to him a lot, but I would assume that he's going to say, you know, what we all should be doing, and that is mobilizing our communities at a local level. Because
Nikki, that document would fit into the local level also.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the notice of liability, and I think that's a powerful enough document as I read it anyway, because everyone's lacking enforcement, and if we don't have enforcement, we might get some resignations at this point, and that's all a plus, but
yes.
It certainly can be used locally too. It's
Are
a
you-
good thought. It's a good thought. I don't think we need it, but... with that notice of liability.
Are you talking about the motu proprio?
Okay,
yeah.
So I got
right.
I got dropped here. I'm going to finish what I was saying. I got dropped here, and usually when that happens, it's because I'm hitting the cabal where they don't want to be hit. And so I'll wrap this up very quickly.
That's what
I
thought.
I don't care what you
That's
use.
That's what she wants.
I don't care what approach you use. As long as you focus it at your county officials, then you will be doing something that will have an immediate effect. And immediate, of course, is a relativistic term. But if you're going to start taking on industries and high-tech corporations and bulk, if you're looking for something, I hope you're into a 7 to 10 year ride, because that's what it's going to take after transition. You can have most effect at your county level. Now, you can, anybody that's executing these processes and these programs and using all of this foul equipment and whatever, remember, it's your local guys that are using this stuff. I mean, I'm not going to get into satellites. I'm not even going to get into that. Okay? But my point is very simple. Take whatever process that you are comfortable with, whatever you want to approach it with, and aim it at your county level officials, because you can have them put away before Christmas next year. End of story. And with that, I yield.
Okay. What document are you talking about? Is it the informed document, or is it something you're working on, John?
I've got, at this point, 5, 6, 7 years worth of documentation and evidence. All I have to do is file, the case. Boom, drop it off. Here we go. Serve these people. End of story. I've been ready for this for a long time. And I keep adding on. I keep getting better. I keep getting polished. But my case files are ready to roll. They've been ready to roll for years.
Thank you. And one more.
I want to be the first one in line, okay? I'm not going to be after all the sleep will all of a sudden wake up and they take 6 or 8 months or a year to learn everything that we already know. And then they start to get in line and there's already 10,000 people in your county that are going after these officials. I want my cases up front.
File them now. File the claim now, right?
Well, there are reasons why I don't do that. And it has to do with spinning your wheels and staying out of jail or getting
caught. Okay.
And I don't spin my wheels. I don't want to go to jail. And I'm sure as hell I ain't getting dead. But I don't play.
Well, just when you were finishing up reporting on what you were talking about last week, what was going to happen, can you do a brief summary of that? I was late.
Well, I touched on that at the very beginning of this call. You want a brief synopsis? I don't know nothing. All I know is it's happening. End of story. That's all I got to say.
Still on the track.
So,
thanks.
Game on. Although one little tidbit that I could share is that evidently last week was all here on U.S. soil, and this week it's all international, and that coincides with Trump in Asia. So I seem to think that when they say international, they're talking specifically Asia. So whatever the hell went down in this country last week is going down in Asia this week. That would be my guess. I think that's a pretty decent guess.
And don't forget about Saudi Arabia.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
John, is anybody working on this notice of liability of trespass technology?
What do you mean by working on it?
Well, I that's what I heard you say about 10 minutes ago. So I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's a hobby. When I have time, I get around to it.
Okay. Is anybody helping you with it is really my question.
Nobody helps me. Well, I mean, I ask for advice, but I do all this stuff. I fly solo. I always get advice.
John,
but I do my own paperwork.
Something about it, and I was wondering if you were working with him on it, because he's interested
No.
Okay.
Well, the notice of liability is ready to go.
Yeah,
that's only for short meters.
Only for what?
If that is your position, then you do not understand the document. It is not just for smart meters. It was originally created deliberately to be used against smart meters.
Print it out and file it right now.
If you got a problem with the gas company, change smart meter to gas company. All you got to do is change the names. I'm doing some other things additional to make it more powerful. I'm broadening its scope. But the document is ready to go as is right now if you want to use it in a corporate contractual setting. It's perfect as is right now.
Are you going to make your changes available to us?
Everything I do I put in the public domain. Which is why my phone line just got cut off a little while ago.
What
are you new here?
Not really.
I was going to mention this earlier in a persnickety way. I said I get insulted when there's a government list I'm not on. What the hell happened with that list? How come I'm not on it?
Well, if other people are having problems with their phones and computers and other radio frequency type devices, it is radio frequency jamming or microwave radio frequency jamming. It's all the same technology, whether they're burning me in my private parts or vibrating my brain with this microwave radio frequency. It's all the same technology. They figure out the jamming frequencies, they figure out the vibration frequencies, and they do it.
I could spend days talking about all the different kinds of technology that are available. You notice I have said twice in this call, I won't even talk about the satellites. I'm not even going to go there. Not yet.
Do with satellites. This is a direct line of sight.
You are not hearing me. You are talking about one specific, tiny, little, narrow technology. There are many, many, many such technologies, and they are certainly not microwaves. That is my point. There are all kinds of things being used against us. It's a huge subject. There's a lot to discuss.
The microwaves are the ones that penetrate buildings, and they're ground penetrating.
They're not the only ones. So do scalar waves.
This is not scalar.
So do standing columnar waves. So do solitron waves. So do tachyon energy. This is all stuff that our mainstream science has no clue what I just said. The ancients knew about it. Tesla knew about it. I know about it.
You're lucky. So.
And Paulette, Paulette's over here waving her hand. She's going, I know about it. Okay, thank you, Paulette. My honey knows.
Hopefully, target you.
John, just for information's sake, are the technologies weaved in with the black magic on a spiritual level, are they together?
Yes, absolutely.
Is that why?
Now you're going into higher level technology, but the answer to your question is yes, absolutely.
Okay, and that scripture reference of Daniel 4:17 that's made on the In Power Movement, that is part of that, isn't it?
I would think so, yes.
Talking about the watchers?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, those are things that I don't get into in NLA conversation, but you asked the question, my answer is yes, you're spot on.
Right, and I'm not asking for details because I've been studying that myself. It all weaves together, in my opinion, and I just wanted to know what you thought. Thank you.
It's inseparable.
Good topic of conversation. There is less of them than there are of us.
That's right.
I yield.
Well, I'm getting hungry, folks. I will entertain any more comments or questions if you wish, but if not, I think we will let Robert go to sleep. Or go out drinking. I don't care. Whatever he wants to do. I'm not his keeper.
Okay.
All right.
I'm going to turn the recording off. That
yep.
concludes the Committee of Safety conference call for November 9th, 2017.
All right, folks. So we'll pick up on the executive branch next Thursday, unless we have all kinds of interesting things to talk about, or both. Anyway, you guys have a good night. Thank you for coming, and I will say bye-bye.
Thanks.